If you go boating on the Great Lakes this summer, it might surprise you to know that deep down below you lives a rare species of fish that's been around since the dinosaurs. It can live past 100 years of age, and it can be over 6 feet long. Most of us know next to nothing about the lake sturgeon, but it is a fascinating creature with a stormy history. Nancy Auer is a professor of biology at Michigan Tech University. She recently co-authored a book with environmentalist Dave Dempsey about the fish. It's called The Great Lake Sturgeon, and it's published by MSU Press. I recently spoke with Nancy Auer about the book and the lake sturgeon. She began with a description of this extraordinary fish.
They're a fish that can grow to great size. They can be as long as we are tall, a lot of us. Males don't gain as much weight as females. Females have a little bit more girth. And they have some historic qualities of a what we call a heterocercal tail, or a tail that's much longer on the top part than on the bottom part. And they don't have any teeth. They have barbels, and they actually suction up their food, usually from the lake bottom. And they have scutes on the outside and not a lot of bone or no bone on the inside of their bodies.
Scutes, what are those?
Scutes are very protective pieces of bone along the side and back and along their stomachs. And their whole head is bone covered, not on the inside, but on the outside. They have a bony covering, and that is to protect them from predators. And
it's something other than scales, is what you're saying.
Right. They're much thicker, just like pieces of bone, only they have, especially when they're young, they have very sharp hooks on the end of them, very almost razor sharp, and as they age, they begin to wear down, so those razor edges aren't as prevalent.
And they're somewhere between the uncommon and rare here in the Great Lakes?
Well, they've been so reduced by overfishing and problems with river corridor access that their numbers have dropped significantly over the years. And as you can imagine, trying to get a fish to make a comeback when it doesn't spawn until it's almost 20 years old, it takes a little longer than with a lot of our other fishes that we're more used to seeing and catching.
They don't spawn until they're 20.
15 to 20 years of age, yep.
That's pretty old in human years.
Yeah, yeah.
And where do you find lake sturgeon? I mean, when you do find them, where do you find them?
Well, normally, like I say, most people don't see them very often because they like the dark, deep areas of lakes. They're sort of the lake vacuum cleaners, if you want, and help keep the lake clean and eat things along the bottom. So most people don't encounter them. They may see them in the warmer months, July and August, when some of the fish begin to move about a little bit, and sometimes they'll even jump or breach out of the water occasionally.
But are their populations known? Do we know they are rare, for example?
Well, it's believed by a lot of the fishery folks that their numbers dropped by the 70s, 80s to 1% of what they were historically. And now we are seeing some populations make a comeback, and there are some, like the Winnebago stock that each year has a spear fishery. That one's very intensively managed to protect that group. But there are some stocks in our areas that are making some comebacks, so we're pretty excited to see some of the numbers coming up.
But can you say they're endangered, for example?
Well, they're threatened in the state of Michigan. They're not listed federally because there still are some populations that are being managed for a fishery, so we can't have them both endangered and threatened and have a spearing season for them. But in most normal, regular areas, except for these few where the stocks are making a comeback, they're very, very rare.
We're talking with Professor Nancy Auer, who is a professor of biology at Michigan Tech University. She's the co-author of a new book called The Great lake sturgeon. They truly look prehistoric, but what's up with the whiskers in front? What are those?
The whiskers are actually barbels. We call them barbels, and they're the whole bottom side of the sturgeon head is covered with sensory organs, sensory receptors, and they're very numerous. They also believe taste sensors on those barbels. So as the fish cruises along the lake bottoms or river bottoms, it can detect organic material and feed on the dead or dying or organic organisms in the lakes.
Tell us a little bit more about their current status, though, here in the Great Lakes region. Are they generally considered a desirable species that is underrepresented, or are there people who still feel they're some kind of nuisance?
Well, I don't think anybody's back to the nuisance stage. Years ago, they were considered a nuisance because there was so much competition with commercial fishermen. But now commercial fishermen often have adapted their nets to be very specific in mesh and size, so that they only collect what they really are fishing for, like, say, whitefish. Or if there are fishermen fishing with gill nets, they're set way up off the bottom, so it's very rare to encounter a sturgeon up in the water column more.
Your book is a great mix of science and narrative, and one thing that's really striking is the history of them as, quote, junk fish, and then money fish, and then endangered fish. Walk us through that history, if you would.
Well, early on, again, because early fishermen used much more delicate materials, cotton and other substances to make nets that were easily broken or ripped. Sturgeon, when they were accidentally caught, were kind of thrown away or used for fuel. They were a nuisance fish because most people didn't really know what to do with them. And then as we had more European influence, it became quite a delicacy. Smoked sturgeon as well as caviar were greatly sought. And so that industry then boomed in the Great Lakes, and that's where we got them to be considerably overfished. There was actually a caviar industry in Sandusky, Ohio. We lost a lot of fish during that peak time of harvesting.
And when was that?
About the late 1880s, 90s. By 1900, 1920, most of the fisheries had closed, and most people pretty much wrote sturgeon off as just being totally gone.
And they were used as fuel, you say?
In those early days, because they have such a rich, oily substance in them. They have a lot of fatty material, which makes them excellent for smoking.
Early in the book, it's mentioned that sturgeon may actually eat zebra mussels, which there would be arguably some advantage to here. Are the sturgeon themselves, though, threatened by any invasives? Or what are the biggest threats to their survival in the lakes?
Well, the biggest threat, they can move around pretty well, and, you know, they're not huge at eating mussels. They will take mussels, but because they like the deeper, darker areas of lakes where a lot of, like, cladophora and other algae doesn't grow, they can sustain themselves pretty well, as they have done historically. The biggest problems right now are all of our major rivers where sturgeon once were. A lot of them are barriered by one, if not more, dams or mill-generating operations that have closed off migratory routes, because these fish need good, clean, oxygenated water found in higher river systems to spawn.
Hmm. So they are found in inland lakes as well, or predominantly in the Great Lakes?
Predominantly in the Great Lakes, but now because some of these systems, like if you think of Michigan and the Burt Black and Mullet Lake chain, I guess it would drain into Lake Huron. from that whole system, but because of dams, they're blocked, so they are considered an inland fish now in that area.
Okay. Are there different varieties of sturgeon? I mean, is the lake sturgeon just one of many varieties?
Well, there's about 27 species of sturgeon worldwide. All of them are in the northern hemisphere. All of them are big river spawners. But in our area, in the Great Lakes, the lake sturgeon is the only species in this particular area.
Why do you find them fascinating? How did you get into the study of this fish?
I had a rare opportunity to visit a hatchery it had to be in the 80s, the early 80s, when people began to think about rearing sturgeon and trying to reintroduce them. And I got an opportunity to go to a laboratory at the University of Wisconsin run by Fred Binkowski, and he was rearing lake sturgeon, and when they're an inch to 3 inches long, they are just the most remarkable and handsome fish you'd ever want to see.
And what is being done to help the sturgeon survive? Where does that stand?
All kinds of things now. A lot of agencies as well as lake groups have made rehabilitation plans, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the USGS, all the Departments of Natural Resources are all working together to, when they encounter sturgeon, to tag them. So most of the fish have a little pit tag like you would put in the ear of your dog or cat that can be scanned, and we know what group it's from and what lake it's from. A lot of populations are now being enhanced by streamside rearing facilities that are popping up because these fish also imprint, and so they need to be reared because they won't come back for almost 20 years. We have to make sure that they get the cue the first time when they're being reared, so they're being reared right on site where we want them to come back.
Very interesting. Well, Professor Nancy Auer teaches biology at Michigan Tech University. She's the co-author of a new book called The Great Lake Sturgeon, along with environmentalist Dave Dempsey. Nancy, thanks for joining us on Current State.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it, and I hope everyone enjoys the sturgeon.
Nancy Auer, again, a professor of biology at Michigan Tech. The book is The Great Lake Sturgeon. This environmental segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. You can get more news on the Great Lakes environment at greatlakesecho.org.